I thank you very much for permitting me to write tonight, and you must believe that I love you as a sister, and would not for all the world call you hard names or make you feel that I am not your true, loving sister. His parents send their love to him and the assurance that they are helping him with all their powers and love. Good night and God bless you both, and in the end lead you to one of the glorious mansions that are waiting for you. Your true friend and the only true love of the doctor, Mary. July 19, 1920. I am here, Jesus. Let me write a few lines and see that you are in a better condition tonight and feel that you would like to hear from me. Well, my dear brother, you must know that always we are anxious and ready to write, and it is only because your condition is such that we cannot form the rapport that enables us to come to you and give expression to our thoughts. I have been with you this evening as you and your friend, Dr. Leslie Stone, discussed spiritual things of the future, and saw that a new awakening had taken place in your soul, and I felt very glad that such was the fact. It is useless for us to attempt to communicate when you are not in condition, for you would not understand just what we desire to convey, even if we could transmit our thoughts. But in the mere physical act of writing you must have a soul development or opening up to the truths that are ours, and which become yours when you are attuned to receive them. I will tell you of one fact that may be helpful to you both, and that is, that many of your spirit friends are surrounding you, always ready to help you and inform you of their love. This is not said in the way of merely assuring you that you are very seldom alone, but of impressing on you the fact that only upon yourself depends the love words of these spirits in making known to you, consciously, that they are present and have thoughts to convey, the Paget messages 1920, that are worthwhile. Nothing frivolous or immaterial to your soul's growth, but always that which will cause you to know that they are true, thinking and loving friends. Very soon now, I will come and write again about the great vital truths of the Father that are necessary for man to grasp and understand. Keep up your faith and pray to the Father, and ask for a bestowal of His love in increased abundance, and you will be like the man who, while all adrift at sea, yet realizes that around him are those things that will save him and bring him safely to shore. I will not write more now. Good night and God bless you both. Your friend and brother, Jesus. September 19, 1920. I am here, Jesus. Let me say a few words tonight, as I see that you were disappointed in the sermon that the preacher delivered tonight. Well, you must not be so disappointed, because he knows only that which he could deduce from the teachings of the Bible, and while what he said was true, yet it is not all of the truth, but discussed only one of the attributes of God, which is the loving care that he has for and exercises over the children of earth. To most men this view of God is satisfactory and gives them much comfort and assurance in the security that arises from the knowledge that there is such a loving and caring Father, and to these men this assurance is of wonderful blessedness and comfort, and it is well that men can have this conception of God, a Father who is always solicitous for their happiness and welfare, and to whom they can pray in the faith that He will hear and answer their prayers. But as we have written you before, the things that men generally pray for and expect to receive in response thereto, and not the things that God in His own personality bestows upon men in answer to such prayers. His great gift is His divine love. These things of the material or earthly in themselves, He leaves to His ministering spirits to bestow, or, in other words, He delegates His angels to so come into contact with and influence the souls of men that they may feel that their prayers have been answered, as they have. The preacher's conception of God does not extend beyond these attributes that in themselves are sufficient to answer men's wants and make them better and happier. I will come soon and write you of God's attributes, and hope that you will get in condition that I may make the necessary rapport. It has been some time since I have written you of these higher truths that are so important to men, and regret that such is the fact. But now that you have had your vacation, and feel that you are willing and anxious that our communications be resumed, I will try to assist you in getting in that condition of soul that will enable the messages to be written you. But as you know, much depends upon yourself, and you must try with all the energies of your soul to obtain a greater inflowing of the Father's love, for only from it can come the condition that is necessary. Pray more and think deeply of the spiritual truths that have already been written you, and we will come together in closer communion and be able to give and receive the messages. I am glad that you have thought more of these things during the past few days, and hope that your thoughts will continue and that your longings will flow more to the Father. You cannot now appreciate the necessity for this condition, and if you could, I know you would give all your thoughts and longings and energy to the accomplishment of the work. Well, I will not write more tonight, but will be with you and pray with you and try to influence you in the efforts to perform the mission that has been given you. Have more faith and believe that you will succeed and you will not be disappointed. Your brother and friend, Jesus. 712, The Paget Messages 1921 and 1922 March 27, 1921. Let me write a few lines tonight, as I have not written you for a long time, and desire to tell you of the scene that was depicted to you tonight by the words and music at the church. I was present at the time of the crucifixion of Jesus and saw all that took place and the wonderful display of the forces of nature that were presented to you tonight in the drama of the crucifixion. Well, as you may not know, many of the scenes that were so forcibly presented to your imagination never had any reality in fact, and the drama was the production of the Oriental mind, which was so often used to depict things that had their origin only in such Eastern imaginations. When Jesus was crucified, there was no great concourse of people, because he was considered as a common malefactor, paying the penalties that followed the violation of the law that he was charged with violating. Of course, there were soldiers and a large number of the members of the Jewish Sanhedrin and a few followers present, but there was no unusual crowd to witness the execution. He was not the only one crucified at the time, and the other two were considered just as the Jews considered him, violator of their laws and one to be punished by hanging on the cross. The words that he is supposed to have uttered at the time of his extremis were not uttered by him, and no words that he may have spoken could have been heard by any of his followers, for they were kept away from the immediate scene of his execution. And it was only after he had been pronounced dead and found ready to be removed from the cross that his followers were permitted to approach his body and remove it from the tree. The others, who were engaged in the execution, did not hear any words of his, and as I have said, his followers could not hear and thus be able to report any supposed saying of his. So far as known, he died as bravely, that is without fear or doubt as to the future, as did any other who has suffered the same fate. The words that he is supposed to have uttered, were not so uttered, and he did not call upon the Father for his help, or to cause the bitter cup to pass from him. And all reports of what he said or 713 did at that time are not true, but merely the imaginings of those who wrote of him in later times. There was no sudden breaking up of nature or things material, and the accounts of the graves opening, and the bodies arising therefrom and being seen and talked within the city are purely fiction, and have no foundation in fact. I know that Christians of today will not be ready to receive these statements as true, because of the long years of belief in these things that have obtained during the centuries. Why men should want to believe in these representations of things that never happened, it is hard to understand, for in themselves that have no significance except that mere endeavor to make as dramatic and impressive on humanity the wonderful circumstances that they allege surrounded the death of Jesus. If they will only think, they must realize that the death of Jesus, accompanied by all the startling environments described in the Bible, did not afford one iota of help in way of saving a human soul or teaching that soul the true way to the Father's kingdom. His life is what had the effect and not his death, and the sooner men learn that truth, the sooner will they learn the fact that no death of Jesus could save them from themselves, or show them the way to the celestial kingdom. I know that men will not want to believe what I have written, and will continue in their belief that all these tragic circumstances surrounded the death of Jesus. And I suppose that this belief will continue with them for a long time to come. But what I have said is true, and no man can by any possible workings of God's laws find any hope or assurance of immortality in these things. You may ask me how I know that Jesus uttered no words at the time of his death, and I can answer by saying that he told me so himself. He has not been present tonight at any of the churches where his death on the cross is celebrated, and will not be until after the time of the great worship and adoration of him by the churches has gone by. This worship is all very distasteful to him and is such that he does not desire to witness, and hence, he remains in his home in the high celestial spheres. He desires men, the Paget Messages 1921 and 1922, to worship only the one true Father that he worships, and thus receive the true benediction of the Father. Well, I see that you are tired and I will not write more. With my love, I will say good night. Your brother in Christ, Samuel. I am here, your true and loving Helen. Well dear, I see that you are tired and I will not write much. The message that you received is from Samuel, who was present at the crucifixion in spirit and heard and saw what took place, and so can be believed. I know also that what the Bible contains as to the crucifixion of Jesus is very erroneous, and written by men to impress their followers of the importance of Jesus' death. I will not write more now. So believe that I love you with all my heart and want you to be happy. Good night. Your own true and loving, Helen. April 17, 1922. Let me write as I desire to say a few words on the question of immortality of which you have been thinking so much during the past few days. I was with you today as you listened to the discourses of the preacher upon the subject of immortality, and saw that you realized he did not have a true idea of what the term means, and thought how much you would like inform him of your knowledge of the subject. Well, I understand just how you felt about the matter, and am in sympathy with you in your desire and hope that sometime you may have the opportunity to converse with him on this subject and give him your conception of the truth. It is the subject of so many sermons and theories preached by preachers and others, and yet not one of them has the true understanding of what immortality is. They understand it only in the sense of continuous life, and in addition, try by argument and inferences to attach to it the idea of never-ending, that is of the continuous life being so established that it can never be ended, and in this they satisfy their longings and desires. But you see, this inference is merely one that is drawn from the desires of the preachers, that they have no true basis upon which to found their conclusions, and as to the ordinary things of life they would not be willing to risk the important things of life upon a 714 basis no better established from which they could draw conclusions that would cause them to act. No, mankind does not really know what immortality is, and all the arguments that they can put forth to establish the true immortality, are not sufficient to convince the clear, cool and unprejudiced mind as to its being a fact. As is said in the message that you have received from Jesus, immortality can be derived only from that which is immortal, and all arguments that merely tend to show that a thing must be immortal because of the desires or intentions of God, do not suffice. All the facts that may be established as premises are not sufficient to logically prove the conclusion desired to be established, and men cannot depend upon such method of reasoning. It is utterly impossible to derive immortality from anything less than that which is immortal in itself, and to attempt to do so by argument or inference is a mere waste of time by the exercise of the reasoning faculties. As has been said, only God is immortal, and that means that the very qualities and nature of himself is immortal, and if it were possible for him to have any qualities that are not of a nature that partakes of the immortal, then these qualities would not be immortal, but subject to change and dissolution. Among the qualities of his being is the great and important one of love, and without it God could not be. His existence would be less than that of a god, and that being a fact, this great quality of love must be immortal, and into whatever this quality may enter and form a part, that thing is necessarily immortal, and in no other way could it become immortal. Then this love of God brings immortality in the true sense of the term, and when it enters into the soul of man and possesses it, that soul becomes immortal, and in no other way can immortality be acquired. Not all things of God's creation are immortal, for in a shorter or longer time they perform the object of their creation, and their existence is no longer required and they become dissolved into the elements of which they were composed. Man's physical body for this reason is not immortal, for after a short life on earth it dissolves and is no more. His spirit body is primarily of this evanescent character, and it may be that in the course of eternity it will have performed its mission and cease to exist. We do not know this, neither are we assured that it is not true, because it is dependent upon the continuous existence of the soul for its continuous existence, and not all souls will receive a part of the Father's divine love. The Paget Messages 1921 and 1922, which is the only thing that has within itself this immortality, and it may be that at some time in the future, this soul without the love may cease to exist and become no more a creature of the Father. But this we do know, that whatever partakes of the divine love has in it that which is necessarily immortal, and can no more die than can this love itself, and hence, must be immortal. So that when men speak or teach that all men are immortal, they speak that which they do not know. Only God, Himself, knows that fact, and from the mere exercise of the reason men are justified in saying, that such men or souls that do not obtain the divine love are not immortal. Now while this question of man's immortality is in doubt, and has never been demonstrated to be a fact, yet we do know that portion of mankind whose souls have received this immortal, divine love, are immortal and can never cease to exist, and the great comfort and blessings to these souls that this possession brings, are that they know that they are immortal because they possess the quality or nature of God that is immortal, and as the latter can never have an ending, neither can that into which this immortal love has entered and found a lodgment have an ending. The preacher's arguments were strong, and in the ordinary workings of men's minds and reasoning powers, may convince men that immortality is a proven fact for all mankind, but when properly analyzed and the true rule of search for immortality is applied, it will appear that the arguments are not conclusive. Hope is stronger than fact, and men have not the assurance that for them immortality holds out its desired arms of certainty. Well, I thought I would write you this short message upon the question that you and the preacher have been meditating upon, in the hope that he might not depend upon the strength of his argument for the establishing of the fact of immortality, but would see and become convinced that the only way to ascertain and acquire the true immortality is by seeking for and obtaining the divine love, and thereby having his soul transformed into the very essence and nature of God in love. I am glad that I can write to you again, and that your condition is so much better than it has been, and permits the rapport to be made. Pray more to the Father and believe, and you will get in a condition that we so much desire. I will not write more. Good night. Your brother in Christ, Luke. 715, March 21, 1923. I am here, James E. Paget. We are all here, and at last I am where I so often desire to be. And when I arrived I was met by Jesus and other high spirits who were formerly with me so often, and also by a great crowd of spirits who were unknown to me, but said that I had enabled them to get out of darkness and become divine angels. Was ever such beauty and happiness conceived of as is now mine? My soul mate is with me and says that a joyous mansion awaits me, and that in a little time we will occupy it. I am in a beautiful place, but have not as yet asked its location. As many are seeking control, I must now stop. James E. Paget. I am here, James E. Paget. Well, Morgan, here I am again. I must say that nothing I ever conceived of compares to the marvelous beauty of my home, as you are aware. We are making as it were a mighty effort to progress. I mean those in the same plane as myself. When I entered this life, I was met by many thousands of spirits who said that I had helped them, and you cannot conceive of the happiness the knowledge brought me. We must continue in this work, as my coming here will only change my location. I am trying for more of the divine love with all the powers on my being. I of course desire this for myself, but I also desire it that I may be better fitted to become a member of your band and participate in the work more fully than it is now possible for us to do. Tell the doctor that I was with him the other morning, and that he actually had the experience of leaving his body and looking upon his old friend. You are many times more developed in your amazing and wonderful powers of making clear and simple and obscure truths than I ever thought you were. I also want to say that you are the mightiest force upon the earth, and that you are known and spoken of, as I am told, all through the spirit world from the highest heavens to the lowest hells. Oh, my friend, if I had only put my energy and determination in the work as you have, how different I would now feel. But some comfort is left me. And that is, for a long time I did, and this has enabled the work to be begun. I am most anxious to see it started, and I. The following messages were received after James Paget passed into spirit. The Paget messages 1921 and 1922, I'm most anxious to make up for my delinquency by my efforts in this life. Jesus often comes to me and comforts me with his love like others of the celestial heavens do. Well, I must stop, as it seems that millions are seeking to get control to write. Your brother in Christ, James E. Paget, tilde ent, 716.